All right, so at this time, I want to introduce a dude that is epic right now. That's all I can say for this guy. This guy was one of the first people I met in Waipaw. He welcomed me with open arms, and from the day we met, it was like we knew each other our whole life, which is what Waipaw means to me, you know, and he really lives it every single day. I love this guy, and I'm honored to have him at this meeting. Rich Paul from Orlando, everybody.
Good evening, everyone. I'm a recovered alcoholic named Rich Paul. My sobriety date is June 24th, 2011. The Central Orlando group is my home group. And it's great to see so many faces I know and so many faces I get to meet tonight. I get to say the word recovered tonight because that's the word that was taught to me by my sponsor in this textbook called Alcoholics Anonymous. And all it really means is I've had an opportunity to get well. I've had the opportunity to get well from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And it's that simple. You know, Johnny and I were talking a few months ago about how he wanted to start a YPG group in Winter Haven. I was kind of wondering if anyone would show up. He said, you know, what should we name it? I sat with it. We bounced some ideas back and forth. And he said, well, how about the Way Out group? You see, if you're a fan of studying the history of AA like I am, our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, was first going to be titled The Way Out. It was voted on, it was agreed upon that was what the title was going to be. But they sent one of our members to the Library of Congress to see if any other books were titled The Way Out. And they found 12 other books titled The Way Out, and they decided they did not want to be the 13th book titled The Way Out. So the people who wanted it to be called Alcoholics Anonymous, in the end, won out. And, you know, I'm a big fan, like I said, of studying the history because, you know, if I can study my own history and if I can study the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe I don't have to make the same mistakes I did in the past or the same mistakes other people did in the past. Tonight I'm going to try to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But tonight's really not about me. You know, tonight's about the couple of guys who raised their hand who are in their first 30 days. You know, tonight's about the people who were, you know, willing to travel from near and far, because at the end of the day, it gets back to our primary purpose of sobriety and carrying that message to the still suffering alcoholic. You know, it's about the person who's struggling tonight. You know, it's really about all you. It's not about me. So that's why I don't have to be nervous tonight. It's not about me, and I just try and get out of my way, out of my own ego's way long enough that my higher power can get across the message he wants to get across. So if you don't like anything I have to say tonight, feel free to take it up with your higher power tonight in your prayers. So I was born in a steel town up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, May 31st, 1988. So for all y'all who like to do math, that puts me at 24 years old. I was the first son of two boys to two loving parents, and I had a childhood nobody could complain about. Loving family, born into a family with means, and no cousins, aunts or uncles, grandparents, siblings, or parents are alcoholics. Now, I didn't have some troubled past growing up. I had it real good and real easy. Came up from a upper middle class family, was well educated and private educatedly, going to private schools my whole life. And even though everything, you know, on the exterior looked great, I always felt really different. I always felt that I was different from everyone else from day one. I can't tell you why, I can remember that from as early as possible. And, you know, that feeling would stay with me until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I tend to think that I was kind of the outsider when I saw different groups or cliques. You know, I never felt a part of something. And whenever I tried to make something happen, it always felt like I was forcing it or going in the wrong direction. You know, growing up, I didn't really start my drinking until I was about 13. And I didn't drink a lot when I was young. I drank on vacations because I watched some friends of mine get busted on a school trip drinking, so I thought I was smarter than all of them. So, you know, I would control my drinking and just drink on vacations when I had less responsibility, more access to it, and more freedom. You know, being privately educated meant my friends who all went to the same school might live an hour or 2 hours away. So you couldn't exactly walk down the street to hang out with your best friends. So if you were going to hang out with anybody, your parents were going to have to pick you up. And I thought that was just way too easy to get busted drinking. And, you know, I always knew where I wanted to go to college. It was a big party school, and so I said I got plenty of time to wait. I watched growing up my dad get together with his fraternity brothers a couple times a year. They would get together for the big game. They would get together for ski trips. They would really be there for one another, you know, when things got rough in their life. And that's something that I really wanted. I wanted some people who I could count on, who would be there thick and thin, no matter what. They would have my back and I would have theirs. So when I got to college, I thought that that's what I should do. I had my sights set on getting into a fraternity. And I started that first semester of college saying that only Friday and Saturday nights would be drinking nights. And, you know, not too long after that, you know, I was invited to Monday night football to some fraternities. And what goes better with Monday night football than beer and pizza? So Monday became a drinking night. And nothing really important happens in classes on Fridays. I mean, no exams, no quizzes, and the professors must know that we're just itching for the weekend anyway, so nothing important happens on Friday, so I don't really need to go. So Thursday became a drinking night. And of course, if you have Monday night football, well, there's football all day on Sunday, so you know, might as well have drinks with that as well when hanging out with the guys. So Sunday became a drinking day. And all of a sudden, I went from that plan first semester of 2 days a week of drinking to 5 days a week of drinking. And it really wasn't that hard to find people on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night to find an excuse to drink. You know, I didn't necessarily drink every night of the week, but there were also plenty of times where I'd sit up at night and I could not remember in the past several weeks the last night that I had not gone to bed, or a night that I had gone to bed without a drink in my system. I just couldn't even remember it. And, you know, at first it was fun. At first I associated it with alcohol, with drinking games, with, you know, good-looking women, with partying, with feeling a part of, because I was good at playing drinking games. So, you know, that's how I started to build some self-worth. Was, you know, if I was good at drinking games, everyone would want to be on my team. So if I did whatever it takes to win, you know, that's one way I could make friends. And I know none of you can relate to being competitive at any nature in your histories, but I was real competitive. You know, I had to make sure that I was the best at everything, and if I wasn't going to be the best at it, or I thought I wasn't going to be the best at it, I wouldn't even try in the first place. There was no reason to attempt it in my mind. I did end up joining a fraternity, but, you know, in the end, I found out that that's not, just because you join a fraternity, that's not what makes you a part of. That's not what has people, you know, wanting to have your back. You know, looking back on my career, you know, of drinking, I can understand why people wouldn't want to have my back when I was drinking. I can understand as my drinking progressed, you know, and as I would, you know, spend Sundays with the guys helping each other to piece together our blackouts from the weekend, you know, what we did at this time or that time or the other, usually because it helped me locate my cell phone or my keys or my wallet or, you know, a strew of other things. Occasionally my jacket, which is very important when you live in Pennsylvania. Middle of winter, it's not fun. But when I was drunk and blacked out, I just didn't care. You know, I was the guy who wanted to stay up later than everyone else drinking, you know, and try to coax my buddies into staying up later. Usually the only key for me to go to bed was if the sun started coming up, you know, or there was no one left to party with and I needed to finish my party with myself until I was knocked out. I got by in school sometimes by luck, sometimes by pulling off stuff the night before, and sometimes by just straight up cheating and, you know, getting other people to do my work for me. I was great at manipulating the girlfriend at the time to do all that stuff for me. And it's not something I'm proud of today, but it's a part of my story. And, you know, that's what a part of being up here is about, is being real. You know, I know I'm capable of doing that work. I just didn't care. And if I could get someone else to do it for me, sounds good to me. By the end of my college career, I had tried to stop drinking to get healthy and lose some of the beer gut. And that didn't work. And, you know, I tried to just drink beer, no hard liquor, because who gets drunk on beer? This guy. You know, I tried to, you know, only drink with certain people. That didn't last long. You know, I tried all these methods to control my drinking. And, you know, that college girlfriend would ask me, you know, can't you just drink a little less? And I didn't understand the concept. And not only did I not understand it, I didn't want to understand it. You know, when I drank, you know, that was how I blew off steam. That was, you know, when all my cares and worries would go away. Good day, bad day, indifferent day. It was a good day to drink. By the end of that college career, the girl was gone. The grades had certainly dropped. I just barely got the last paper in time to graduate. I'd hurt a lot of friends and family. You know, I'd started fights at cousins' weddings. I'm there at his wedding, and I'm starting a fight with him the night before his wedding. That sounds pretty selfish and self-centered to me, but I couldn't see it at the time because all I could see was me. I thought if I moved to Florida to a warmer climate, that all my problems would be solved. Sounds like some of y'all have some experience with that. And I tried that, but I had a lot of trouble making friends. You see, I was afraid to go out to bars and clubs to meet people because I was worried I'd get drunk and mouth off and I would have nobody to have my back. So the reason I was not going to go out was because I had no one to have my back. Of course, it had nothing to do with my drinking. And that was just my delusion again, again and again. That great job I had, I squandered away. I got another good job, a real good job, one I was good at, loved, and then decided to go out drinking one night with some of the coworkers. And drinking, you know, at dinner, learned to... Apparently I need a little water here. I'm getting a little tongue-tied. Drinking at dinner led to drinking in the evening, and drinking in the evening led to drinking in the morning, and, you know, which led to a blackout, which led to not a great performance at work the next day. And you can imagine I wasn't there much longer, but I still said it wasn't my drinking. I did some traveling and some work with my younger brother, and, you know, it got to the point where, you know, my younger brother's pretty much my favorite person in the world. And it got to the point where, you know, I'd actually, one night drinking with my fraternity brothers, the last night I picked up a drink. I don't remember much of it. I just remember grabbing anything that I could get my hands on. It was one of those nights where I said the heck with it and just threw down anything and felt entitled to it. And I woke up with a real nice purple eye, best one I've ever had. Cuts, bruises, banged up all over my body, which, of course, I didn't feel at first when I first woke up because I was still drunk. A door and a door frame ripped from the wall. I don't remember much of that night, but from what I'm told, there was one of my fraternity brothers who looks like a lumberjack, one of the guys who's a mixed martial artist, and one of the guys who's a football player. All three of them had to hold me down that night because they were worried I would go out and hurt myself or hurt someone else. And even with the three of them holding me down, I still managed to kick down that door and door frame. And once again, it's not something I say because I'm proud of, but I say to illustrate the insanity that my disease had gotten to. And I was that close to writing it off the next day. You know, you co-sign my bull, I'll co-sign yours next time. You know, you let me off the hook this time, I'll let you off the hook next time. Do the standard round of apologies the next day. And, you know, try to laugh it off. Fortunately, I'm not very handy when it comes to door frames. So I called my uncle to help me out, and he came to fix it. And I asked him, you know, I really appreciate you taking time out of your work day, you know, bringing one of your employees to help you. You know, how can I compensate you for this? How can I repay you? And he said, never pick up a drink again. So I don't think you can do it, but never pick up a drink again. I can tell within 3 to 5 years, you're either going to be in debt or jail. And I could tell he was absolutely right. I was going downhill, and I was going downhill fast because I really didn't have much of a will to even live anymore. He told me how he had dated an alcoholic for a long time, and he had tried to support her in getting her sober, taking her to meetings and whatnot, but she didn't want to get sober, and he couldn't get her sober, obviously, so he had to go. And you know, I went home to kind of lick my wounds that night. You know, I couldn't lay in a position that was comfortable because I had a scratch, a bruise, a banged up on every inch of my body, most of which I don't even remember what was from that night. And for whatever reason, the next day, the thought came to me to jump on the computer, check out an AA meeting, and I went to the first one I could find. Of course, I showed up late. Was in the basement of a little Baptist church with about a dozen little old white-haired ladies and one toothless old man. So I had a little bit of a trouble identifying. But I was hurt bad enough that I went to another meeting that evening. And, you know, you could still smell the alcohol reeking from my pores. You could probably tell I was new based on the shiner I was sporting, and trying to hide under my hat wasn't going to go very far in a 30-40 person meeting. And I raised my hand when I said it was, you know, my first AA meeting. You know, it was the first time I was going to go to a beginning to the end AA meeting. And when they asked if someone had a desire to stop drinking, I went and picked up a chip. About all I remember from that meeting, except that afterwards someone gave me a big book, the one I have right here before me. I don't know those people. I was traveling at the time, but my own friends and family didn't want to barely have anything to do with me, and here are these people who had their hand out and wanted to be of service to me and help. And that made an impact. I carried this book around with me for the next month and a half. doesn't do you much good, I found, if you just keep it in the bottom of your backpack as you're traveling around. You don't crack it open and read it. You know, I copped a resentment at a meeting a few weeks later and didn't go back. You know, didn't call anyone, didn't talk to anyone, used every excuse in the book why not to get a sponsor. And my younger brother, I mentioned before, my favorite person in the world, got to the point where, you know, he called me a violent and angry drunk. And I thought to myself, why would he say something like that? I was so hurt and so angry at him. He told me, I love you because you're my brother. But if we were friends or if we met on the street, we wouldn't be friends. That's my favorite person in the world saying that. And that made an impact on me to the point where I needed to get back to Orlando. I needed to get it with this program and make something happen. So that's what I did. I got back to Orlando, went to the first meeting I could find, and talked to the chairperson after the meeting saying, you know, what's this sponsor thing about? And, you know, she directed me to a few guys outside, and, you know, I had the brilliant idea of mentioning, well, I need a sponsor who's like this. And a sponsor who's like that. And they need to have my beliefs on this. And they need to have my experience and background on that. And a guy looks at me and goes, dude, you're not going to marry him. Just pick a sponsor, start working the steps. If it doesn't work out, get a new one. That's how it works around here. And I went out to coffee with those guys that night. Here are these guys I just met, and they're inviting me out, and I hadn't, you know, I'd lived in Orlando almost a whole year and hadn't made a single friend. Oh, I figured all I had to do was go to an AA meeting. And, you know, one of those guys became my sponsor. You know, I'm a big fan of the traditions. They're real important to me. But drugs are a part of my story. And the main reason I bring it up right now is between the time that I took my last drink and the time that I really started working a program with that sponsor, I was out there using illegal drugs. And I rationalized to myself, this is AA, not NA, even though I knew nothing about either. And therefore, it was okay to do those illegal drugs. And, you know, before that sponsor started sponsoring me, you know, he said, you know, I can be your friend, but if you want to keep doing that, I can't be your sponsor. And I said, all right, I'll put those down too. And we got me a new sobriety date. And, you know, I say that because I sat in meetings and I didn't know at first that you couldn't also do that. So that's why I bring it up, because maybe there's someone out there like me who is working on that rationalization right now. We did steps 1, 2, and 3 pretty quickly. Step 1, I was powerless over alcohol. I had proven pretty recently that that was easy to accept. But my life was unmanageable. You see, I still had a car. I still had an apartment. I'd never been arrested. Although if you clock everything together that I should have been arrested for, I probably would never have seen the light of day again. You know, I wanted to tell you all the reasons I was different than all of you. And that kept me separate. When I was invited to take a look how I was like you, had I hurt friends and family? Yup. Was a significant other gone? Yup. Had I lost a job? Yup. Had I gotten into fights? Yup. Had I lost a lot of money? Yup. And my head started doing this bobbing thing we do in meetings. And suddenly I was like, yeah, I guess my life is unmanageable. You know, I always had a higher power, some sense of spirituality in my life, but it was very on and off. I had a big resentment against the word God based on, you know, my upbringing in the church. I was kind of the chubby kid, so I got teased a lot at Sunday school. So I equated church, religion, Sunday school, Rich getting picked on. So it really wasn't my favorite subject. You know, I had some sort of higher power, but it was intermittent. You know, I thought I could only really be spiritual when I sat time to be completely quiet, or when I went to a spiritual conference or a retreat. I didn't understand the idea that spirituality and quote-unquote the real world could coexist at the same time in my daily life. So, you know, it was real easy for me to come to believe in a power greater than myself that could restore me to insanity, because I could definitely tell I was insane by that point. I was still sporting part of that shiner from more than a month ago. You know, then it came to step three, and, you know, he said, we're going to kneel down and say this third step prayer. And I was a little wary of this, but, you know, he took one knee. So I was like, all right, cool, it's a sports thing. So, you know, that makes it okay. I got that. And we said the third step prayer. And, you know, there are a lot of different kinds of spiritual experiences and spiritual awakenings, but that was certainly a spiritual experience for me. And, you know, any of the guys that I've taken through the steps that I've been blessed to do the third step prayer with them, I have another spiritual experience at that juncture as well. There's something meaningful about going through that process or being witness to that process. And I decided to write a nice long list of people I was resentful at for step four. And for about the next 10 meetings I went to, I heard people say, oh, I went out and drank again because I screwed up step four. I forgot something, I did it wrong, etc., etc., etc. And I got terrified. So I dragged my heels. And after a month of me dragging my heels, my sponsor shot me a text and said, you need to go find a new sponsor. I can't help you if you ain't willing to do the work. My very first thought was, I can do this on my own. Whoops. And my very second thought was, We know the results that I've gotten when I try to do it on my own. Fortunately, I'd been working with another man in the fellowship to start a young person's meeting at a local university. And I asked him if he would sponsor me. And he agreed, provided that I do a few things for him. You know, read the doctor's opinion and the spiritual experience. I said, oh, well, I'm on step four. He said, that's nice, you're on step one. And that was a little blow to my ego, but that's exactly what he was trying to see, was how willing was I? And I was willing in enough pain to do whatever he said. So we did steps one, two, and three together. And he handed me my assignment for my fourth step. And he said, better get to this because we're doing your fifth step on Saturday. See, he didn't believe in waiting around. The steps are my medicine as an alcoholic. You know, if I had a heart problem or a liver problem or a lung problem, I would want the right medication. I would want the right quantity. I'd want to take it the right way and run with it for the rest of my life. I wouldn't want to say, I'll take a little bit now and a couple months from now we'll take another dose. No. My sponsor taught me that I needed to get into the steps and I needed to get into them now. And we sat there, and when I did my fourth step, it went a lot faster than I thought it would. When I actually just sat down to do it, it just kind of all came streaming out. And then when I sat down to do my fifth step, a similar experience, it all came streaming out. And all those things that I thought no one had ever done before, he'd done that and much more. It's always nice having a real low-bottom sponsor. He lets me say that. I'm probably going to take hell for it later, though, when someone reminds him I said that. But he had me go home, as the instructions in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous say, and sit for an hour and think on the first five proposals. And Bill W., one of the main authors of the book, was told early on that if you want to sound smart, find a way to say the same thing over and over using different words. So when it said the first five proposals, all it really meant was the first five steps. Had I thoroughly done the first five steps? Had I left anything out? And he told me, if after an hour and I haven't heard from you, I know you'll have knelt down and done steps 6 and 7. Because he went over those directions too. And when I did that, something I thought never was possible happened by step 7. My desire to drink was gone. And it hasn't ever come back since. Now, I'm not going to tell you I've never had a drinking dream or I've never had the thought cross my mind. But that's all it is a passing thought. That desire that got me, used to get me off the couch, into the car, to the bar, to the liquor store, to whatever means necessary, has never come back. And, you know, it came time to do steps 8 and 9. And I'd already had a list from 4, so it was pretty easy to do step 8. It was pretty much copy and paste. And then it was time to do step 9. And my higher power has a pretty good sense of humor. I don't know about y'all's, but mine has one heck of one. And right when I got to step 9 was the week before a full family cross-country family reunion. So I had ample opportunity to do amends that weekend. And I was terrified of doing each and every one of those amends. And each and every one of those amends went better than I thought it would. Each of those amends had a positive outcome. And I'm closer to each of those family members now after that than I ever had been before. You know, there had been another cousin that I wasn't invited to his wedding based on my performance at his brother's wedding where I got into a fight with the groom. And the following year after I'd made amends, I was sitting there holding his firstborn son. If that's not a miracle of the program, I don't know what is. Someone who didn't even want me at his wedding, the most precious thing in the world he had just sitting in my arms, no one worrying about it, no one worried about Rich was, you know, breathing heavy liquor onto him or going to drop him or do God knows what. There was that trust. Trust like I'd never known from that cousin before. I asked my sponsor when we should get to step 10. He said, how about right now? He told me it was important for me to go over my daily, important for me to go over my day so that I didn't let things pile up and have to do a nice long four step. You know, when things were wrong, get right with them right then. And if it got to the end of the day and you hadn't figured out you'd done wrong, we'll get to it the next day as soon as you can. And short after that, I asked him, when should we get to step 11? He said, how about right now? He talked to me about the importance of daily prayer and meditation. And, you know, meditation has come to take on a lot of terms these days. So he encouraged me to get a dictionary from back in the 1930s when this book was written. Because words mean different things today than they did then. And meditation doesn't necessarily mean I need to climb up onto a mountain and, you know, fast the entire day and be silent. It means I need to take time to be quiet in my day, to really just sit with my higher power and ask for that knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry it out. That's the part I always want to forget about 11. I'm really trying to get in contact with him and have him tell me what to do, and ask for the power to carry that out. So I need to meditate on that. And I need to pray to have that continuity of relationship. I told you in my past, I'd had some spiritual experiences, but there'd never been continuity of spirituality. And I can tell you that's what made all the difference in my sobriety today. That continuity of praying every day, sometimes every hour, sometimes every few minutes, depending on Orlando traffic. But I asked him, you know, when do we get to step 12? He said, well, have you had a spiritual awakening? And, you know, I didn't have a desire to drink anymore, so that was a spiritual awakening in my book. So I said, yeah. He said, well, I guess it's time to start sponsoring. And I said, well, I only have like 2.5, 3 months. I hear all these people say you're supposed to have a year. And he said, can you flip to that page in the big book for me? I had a lot of trouble finding that page. What he did show me was a story in the back of the book that I've come to find was written by a girl named Earl Treat. And his sponsor was Dr. Bob. And this is the only place in the book I've seen, you know, the timeline for doing the steps. I've heard the word next in the steps. I've heard the word immediately. I've heard the word upon awakening, things. But I never hear a real timeline. And as I said, Earl was sponsored by Dr. Bob. And it talks about, you know, the day before he was supposed to go back to Chicago, that he went to Dr. Bob's office. And they sat down and in 3 to 4 hours went through the steps. So my sponsor pointed out to me that if the co-founder of AA took a sponsee through the steps in 3 to 4 hours and then told him to go start sponsoring guys, I was about 2 months, 3 weeks, and 20 hours behind schedule. So I better get to it. And that's what I did. I started, you know, talking to those guys who were brand new after the meeting. I'd already done that from day one because I was told service was important. You know, but, you know, I started trying to qualify guys when they were new. And I've had the good fortune in my time to work with dozens of guys. You know, some guys have only gotten as far as asking me to be their sponsor, and I've never heard from them again. Some guys, I've been blessed to walk with them through all the steps. You know, there was one time in particular where I was real down, where one of the guys went back out who I'd been working with for about 7 months, and he was even sponsoring guys, but I'd watched him backslide and saw it coming, but was still not happy about it. And I called my sponsor, and he said, well, I have 100% success rate with sponsoring. So that clearly got my attention. And he told me, well, some of them are dead, some of them are drinking, some of them are probably in jail, but I stayed sober the entire time. He got me again. And that really, you know, I love how I can get with my brain going in one direction, and my sponsor or his sponsor or another trusted friend in the program can get it to flip just like that with a simple idea. I'm so stuck in, oh, my sponsee didn't say sober. Me. But realizing I stayed sober the whole time and I wasn't giving him a gift. He was giving me a gift. He was giving me the gift of the opportunity to stay sober. He was giving me the gift of to dig deeper into my big book. He was giving me the gift to answer questions that I had never thought about in sobriety. And, you know, I didn't have to, you know, make up anything. Because if I didn't know something, I just told him straight up, I'm going to have to get back to you on that. And, you know, run it up the flagpole to my sponsor. And the nice part about that is, you know, he's got about 11 years of experience, and if he can't answer it, he calls his sponsor, who has about 28 years. And if he doesn't, you know, the answer, he calls his sponsor, who has 36 years. And so on and so forth. You know, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to make up any answers. I just need to study the book and study the history. All the answers are already right there. It's just a matter of putting my finger on the right page, the right paragraph, and the right sentence. One of the many promises, of which I've been able to find over 100 promises in the first 164 pages, but one of the many promises that this program can solve all of my problems. Not just the drink problem, it can solve all of my problems. And I've found that to be right every single time. I've gotten to do tons of stuff in sobriety that I never anticipated. You know, at 3 months sober, I followed somebody to a host committee meeting for the Ficky Paw Space Coast Host Committee in 2011, just because I wanted to see what was going on, and there were two people there that didn't have positions, including myself, and there were two positions left. Funny how that works out. I was so busy my first conference being on the committee, being the co-chair for the security committee. You never know how much mayhem 750 sober alcoholics hopped up on Red Bull, caffeine, and all sorts of things can get into trouble. You know, before I picked up my year chip, you know, my sponsor had me helping lead a tradition seminar at my home group. It's not because I know anything special or I know anything more than anyone else who was there. Anytime I get asked to do something, it's an opportunity for me to dig in and learn more. If anything, when I'm asked to do something, there's a greater responsibility that it's time for me to get my head back in the book. It's time for me to, you know, make sure I can carry the message to the best of my ability. Because lives depend on it. Most importantly, my own does. You know, I've got to study the history of my home group, the Central Orlando group, and be its first archivist, going back and trying to catalog all the records and save all the minutes and digitize them so we have them for years to come. And that's been a fun task, seeing as we have the oldest group in the central Florida area there. And we never had an archivist, but, you know, now we do, because my sponsor pointed at me and said, guess what you're going to do? You know, I find that I can learn a lot about this program everywhere. I'm a big fan of speaker tapes. I load up my car or my iPhone or my iPod to listen to speaker CDs in the car. And some of the best things I've learned about the Big Book have been from Big Book study workshops and 12-step workshops and just general people's speaker meetings, where there's some part of their story I can always identify with. You know, and my sponsor would often hand out CDs to me, so I try to pass that on and hand out CDs to other guys and gals when I hear something that's real good. I pass it out, and maybe they'll get some use out of it. You know, all the silly guys who decide to ask me to sponsor them get told straight up in the beginning, you got two options as a beginning part of your program with me. Is either you can spend every Saturday all day for a few months sitting in a Big Book study, or I'll give you this nifty little CD and you can listen to it for a half hour every day with your book open, pen, pencil, highlighter in hand, and listen to a half hour every day. And given those two options, they're usually real excited to do the CD. But the point of it was, that was what was given to me because my sponsor knew how important it was for me to study the book and how important it still is. You know, I'm getting real excited because, you know, my sponsor and a group of guys chucked all their marked up big books aside, brought out all new ones. 12 of them sat there going through the Big Book line by line every week for a year. And you know what? That helped their sobriety a lot. And one of the agreements that they made was that when completed, each of them would go out and put together a Big Book study group with 12 people in it, and so on and so forth. And I can't wait for that to get started. There have been so many gifts of this program that I could literally stand up here all night talking. You know, I can go to pretty much any major city in Florida and see people who are excited to see me and know my name. And in my drinking days, the people who knew my name were the people who were not excited to see me and usually would be going the other direction as opposed to coming towards me today and giving me a hug. You know, I've gotten to connect with young people, which was something that I pushed off for a while, because, you know, it was easier for me to talk to older people because, you know, I could still have that barrier. But when there was other young people, it was really just straight up peers in my mind. And that's been a real gift too. be able to travel around the state and make different friends in different places. And, you know, to do my best to get out of my own way and, you know, let my higher power bring the message that he wants. You know, and anytime I've had trouble in AA, I've dug deeper into the program. Whether it's, you know, looking for newcomers, whether it's listening to speaker CDs, getting into steps, talking with my sponsor, talking with new people, doing service, being active in my home group, or times when it's really good and I don't think it can get any better, I dig a little deeper into the program, and it gets better every single time, without fail. So if you take nothing away but that, take that away from the night. Wherever you are in your sobriety, I guarantee you, it can get better. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks.